B-Pod Studios.
Watch Toucher and Rich on Twitch. Follow the Sports Hub on Twitch.tv for live shows and reruns. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
See, Finn, you should have just quit while you were ahead. You really should have. Now you are going to be forced to leave the game as a beaten, broken, hot piece of garbage like Rob Gronkowski.
Rick Derringer with one of the greatest wrestling theme songs of all time, of course, behind Ass Man.
It's number two.
It's number two. But last night, a lot of people like me who don't usually watch wrestling were flipping back and forth between that and the Bruins to see if indeed Rob Gronkowski was going to show up and make an appearance. He did not. Instead, we had some gratuitous scenes of men standing in a ring and staring at each other and not really saying much and pausing for 45 full seconds before they spoke again. I'm telling you, wrestling is fine. I have no problem with the action of it. As a matter of fact, there was a guy last night named Ricochet who was one of the most athletic dudes I've seen in a while. His finishing move was like a 2.5 on top of a guy. It was just phenomenal. However, much like as I said, they made three movies out of The Hobbit. It was like a 90-page book. It could have been literally an hour and a half film. Wrestling does not need to be 3 hours long. Jake, all the standing and staring around and the 45 seconds it takes to come down, or the 45 minutes it takes to come down the ramp and actually start speaking, and just compress it into one good hour, and then you'd be perfectly fine. I have no problem with the whole theatrics of it. I know a lot of people are like saying, oh,
it's going to be a little more digestible.
It's way too long. 3 hours was utterly ridiculous.
And that's on TV.
And that's on TV, and that's not being there, which is even longer and more gratuitous. However, there are a faction of people, especially here at the radio station, who absolutely love the wrestling. And it seems like a pretty good time. They've got the Kowloon crew. They all hang out together, and the Kowloon crew used to be a group that included
emphasis on used to be.
That's right. It was Andy Wong.
There's problems here.
You had Jimmy Stewart and Sarge Mike Riley, who of course both do the wrestling podcast here.
Yep. Sometimes one does it without the other.
Well, I mean,
it doesn't always happen with the both of them.
So we learned that yesterday, and that was strange because we had Elias in studio, who was very funny and a good guy, and I like his character. But when he was done at 8:45, he sat out there in that little living room area that we have outside of the studio for over an hour waiting for Jimmy Stewart to show up to record their podcast. Jimmy Stewart shows up, and apparently Sarge, who was here for our interview, had forgotten about it.
Got
and
back
left.
In his car and left.
And then Jimmy Stewart's like, we're doing this interview, and he was driving back as fast as he could, and he ended up not being able to make it. Then there's a theory that Sarge was never even told about it in the first place, which means there's a little divide in between the two Behind the Ropes Wrestling podcast guys. And then you've got one member of the Kowloon crew going off on his own, Mr. Joe Murray. He's got his own box now.
How is that? I still have not gotten an answer as to how he can afford his own suite.
He's answered it like five times.
Dude, no. He's a bankroll boy.
Big bets.
The guy makes mad cash, all right? Well, first of all, A, he's got a regular job. B, he does stuff at the station. And so he works a lot. And okay. C, have you seen those sweet picks he's been giving me, man?
That's a good point. Winning big.
Sweet, right. Sweet picks.
It's turning time. It's probably raking in cash.
He's the last person you need to be asking. However,
where does he get the money? Please.
Intern Nick yesterday went to the extravaganza.
Yes. Yep.
And thought he was going to be getting in the Kowloon box. However, Nick, what happened when you showed up at the box?
So I went down there. The box was a level lower than ours, and I was waiting to get in because the doors lock. They're locked, so I was texting Sarge to let me in, and Jimmy Stewart comes out, and he's like, oh, hey, Nick, opens the door real quick, walks out, closes the door real quick so it's locked, and walks away.
Right in your face.
Right in my face.
Looking at you as he walks away.
And it wasn't like I was pretty, you know, not near the door. I was near the door.
And again,
I was
like, addressed you.
That was, you're not allowed to come in.
Right.
Okay, and the whole time you're also like calling Sarge, who's inside the room, the suite that you just got locked out of.
Right.
And he's not answering.
At first, I was mad at Sarge because I thought he was just not responding to my text to let me go away or whatever. And he finally texts me back. I don't fault him at all, but I was pissed. Okay. I was pissed.
What was his excuse?
He literally could have just walked over and opened the door.
What was his excuse for not texting you back?
His phone was charging.
Okay, well, if it's charging, it means it's working.
It's on.
It's on.
Yeah, that's a little fishy.
Probably still ringing.
I don't know.
I think your anger at Sarge was warranted.
He did come up to our suite and ask him for me.
Did he mooch free food?
No, he did not.
Your suite? You're talking about Joe Murray's suite.
Yes, Joe Murray's suite.
He's like, hey, good to see you. Sorry.
He came up and he apologized and said he was charging his phone, so he didn't have it on him.
All right, so let's get to outside of the TD Garden. Our good nearly dead Nick talked to a couple of the fans out there. Let's hear what they had to say.
Can we use this for the radio?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Tell me about your night so far at WWE Raw.
Oh, it's been great. It started out with Becky Lynch.
Okay.
Obviously. Boston.
Yeah.
WWE knew what they were getting into. They brought out Finn Balor next. Irish on Irish.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's a good match.
Two Irish in a row.
So tell me what's happened
Nick,
so far.
This guy could be speaking in Chinese to you.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
Yep, yep, cool. Yeah, yep. Yeah. Irish, Irish stuff.
Mm-hmm. He's pretty much just recapping what happened, yeah.
So tell me what's happened so far tonight.
Well, Becky Lynch won.
Okay. What was the matchup?
Anything else doesn't matter.
So you're a big Becky Lynch fan.
Oh, I'm a Becky Lynch guy.
So what makes her so appealing? Why do you like Becky Lynch?
She's awesome.
Okay,
she's
cool.
Also Irish.
So who's in the main event for WrestleMania?
In WrestleMania?
Yeah.
Oh, it's Becky, of course.
Okay, who else is it?
Ronda Rousey and who's this guy? I gotta listen to the music. Oh, it's Baron Corbin. He sucks. He's gonna fight Kurt Angle. This one time about like 5 years ago in Lowell, I accosted Kurt Angle in a bar. He was my hero, and he's why I wrestled in high school.
So you accosted him?
Seems like an exaggeration.
God, it would suck to be a professional. I'm not kidding you. It's like these guys, like we were talking to Ted Johns, like people picking fights with him. It's like, oh, look, I'm going to be the king of the bar. I can totally kick his ass. And if you're like Ted Johnson or Kurt Angle, you can't do anything.
Right.
Because you'll get sued.
Right.
It doesn't matter. You just can't win in that situation. You have to leave. So say you're having a good time at the bar and you're hanging out with your friends, and all of a sudden this guy like starts to come and pick a fight with you. You have to leave. You have no other choice.
He was my hero, and he's why I wrestled in high school. And then we were wasted in Lowell, and he was at the bar. That was a pretty good night.
That's great. So you're a big wrestling fan.
Excellent follow-up. Are you listening to a word he's saying, Nick?
No. Okay. Now I'm sorry. I'm also distracted because Sarge is texting me.
Turn off your phone.
Right.
Why is Sarge texting you?
Hey, Sarge, he's charging his phone. He can't answer it right now. Okay? He needs to charge it, Sarge.
It's an excellent.
There is a charge for the Sarge.
Excellent comeback. All right, let's hear this.
That's great. So you're a big wrestling fan. Do you listen to the wrestling podcast?
Oh, I listen to the podcast every week.
Oh, you do? So you're a big fan.
Big fan
of Jimmy Stewart.
Big fan of the podcast.
Yeah, he's
big
great. He's a Jimmy really Stewart. Great guy.
I like how they're talking about having it.
You are so
mad.
I was so pissed.
I was so pissed. I thought that was so just like so mean.
Did you
mean
say
he's spirited?
Did you say he's garbage?
He's a great guy.
Okay. Let me hear it. Let me hear this one more time.
Yeah, he's great. He's a really great guy.
I like how they bring up Matt Tab.
I thought he said he's garbage too at the end there.
Like I said, I was very pissed.
So I got a text from, okay, so when I had you go out there, I wanted you to interview fans.
Yeah.
Like, I even said, you don't have to interview Sarge or Jay Stu. Now, if they indeed did that harebrained scheme where they were going to make money by getting pictures, people to take pictures of them, Jesus. I was like, you have to interview the people that actually paid for it. So that was not part of the plan. So Nick texted me last night, says, don't expect anything involving Sarge or Jimmy Stewart tonight. And I didn't think anything of it. And that was you just being like pissed. And
that was like, that was 5 minutes after I got back to Joe Murray's, and I was steaming, and I was venting the bird. I was literally screaming. I was pissed. There was no better way to explain it. I was furious.
Because this is the second time he's pissed you off.
Yeah. The first time was just, was at the holiday party.
That's right. Where Jimmy just said flat out to Nick, I'm sorry, you can't sit here. I don't trust you.
I literally just sat next to him. Yeah. And I looked at him. I was like, don't worry.
In fairness, when he walked out of the room and locked the door, did you say, hey, can you let me in?
He kind of beelined it pretty much. So I was like,
he's a shifty guy.
Yeah, shifty guy. Right. So, yeah.
Wait.
Podcast. Yeah, he's great. He's a really great guy.
I like how they bring up Matt Taven every week. He's an old friend of mine.
What do you think of Mike Sarge Riley?
I love Sarge.
Okay, do you think it's weird that he's promoting that he's doing meet and greets for $20?
Oh, I heard about that. I almost thought about paying for it, but then I knew you were going to be here, so I didn't.
You should have. That would have been great. Now we know what Sarge will do for $20. What do you think he'll do for $50?
Well, you know what I did for no dollars last week? I was at the bar, and the bartender, she collected that tray mat that collected all the alcohol where they do the shots, and then she poured it into a shot glass, and I did it.
Oh, that's
this guy's for gross. Free.
Gah.
Yeah.
$50?
Not even for
back in the day, I would have.
He said free, yeah?
Yeah, for free.
Oh, you did it for free?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah,
50
all
bucks, right. Sure.
I don't, for free.
I don't believe that.
Wow. That was pretty disgusting. I'd say that's worth $20.
Okay. So what? Do you think Gronk's going to be in the WWE?
Not tonight.
No.
Tonight would have been too big of a... it would have taken away from the WWE show.
Yeah, so, it would have just ruined everything.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been a major news story this morning.
WWE has a little more integrity than that. I don't think they're going to try to ruin their product by trotting Gronk out there.
Sure. Everyone wanted to see Scottish McScottish guy, whoever it was last night,
do
his thing. Scottish. No, there was a Scottish guy. It was called Scottish guy with, like, stringy hair. They all have stringy hair.
Scottish McScottish?
He was, like, the bad guy.
His name's, like... Drew McIntyre. Of course his last name is McIntyre. Scottish was Scottish guy.
Yeah.
Drew McIntyre.
It would have taken away from the WWE show.
So, naming our tight end on the Patriots.
Lacoste. I have a very photographic memory. So it's like Matt Lacoste or something of that nature.
Pretty good.
What do you think Gronk's finishing move would be?
It's going to be a spike. He's going to, like... choke slam the guy and then just spike him to the ground.
What would it be called?
The spike.
The spike.
Yeah.
It's very unoriginal.
That's the move, though.
All right. If you could say anything to wrestlers in the world, what would it be?
If it was Becky, I'd say, Becky, Becky, would you marry me?
All right. Well, you've been a real treat.
That's really Scott.
Sure, said if you could say anything to James Stewart, what would you say? You suck. I hate you.
Couldn't quite siphon off all that anger.
Yeah, got a real edge.
I have to say, I'm putting a little bit of the blame on you. I think that if someone did that to me, I would say, why aren't you letting me in? I would at least follow up.
I know. I should have.
So you think he's been standoffish because Jay Stu...
Well, I didn't finish what happened at the Kowloon party. So it was like I sat right next to him.
You need to save that because we have Matt Chatham coming on. And we need to talk to him. He is basically kicking people's ass all over Twitter who say that Rob Gronkowski isn't a Hall of Famer. And yeah, he's been pretty fantastic. We love having Matt Chatham on. We'll talk to him next. And after that, we will find out why James Stewart actually hates Mr. Nick, nearly dead Nick. We'll get to that in a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Brady won't throw me the ball because he has no trust in me.
Rich.
Buddy, I have a super dry tongue. Look.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We're a Rob Gronkowski, the sexiest man on the New England Patriots, and he dared me to say that. And nothing about the sexiest man on the team.
We got to give that to one of the linemen today. All the linemen are sexy. They got that sexy body and everything. So they played a great job. They're the ones who should get laid tonight, those linemen.
All right. Be good. All right.
.985 a Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich. Adam Jones filling in. Gronk was the greatest tight end in NFL history. To the chagrin of number humpers, the real job isn't just the Monday morning box score. He did it all at a Hall of Fame level. Not a backside blocker really playing wide receiver. He was the point of attack in all things like no tight end before him. The man who tweeted that out and used the phrase number humpers is one of our favorite guests, Mr. Matt Chatham, who has been going after people not only on Twitter,
boy,
but
Matt,
it seems in other forms of media who have been questioning Rob Gronkowski's place in the Hall of Fame. Matt, good morning. Have you humped any numbers this morning?
No number humping. I'm not a morning person, so, you know.
It's not until after, at least, 3 or 4 o'clock to get your second wind. That's when, exactly. You start getting romantic with all the numbers. All right. So, by the way, Matt Chatham on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. I saw Stephen A. Smith yesterday, and you knew one of those talking heads was going to say something to get noticed. Well, we're noticing him. He says that, let's just first start with, before we get to the Hall of Fame thing, the greatest of all time is something that's being thrown around, and I know that you, according to your Twitter account, believe that he is. Stephen A. Smith was saying he's not even close to Tony Gonzalez just because of the sheer number of games that he's played, and because of that, he has higher numbers here and there. What do you have to say about people who think that Rob Gronkowski is indeed not the greatest tight end of all time, and, for argument's sake, use the example of Tony Gonzalez?
I hate even going down this road because I have a lot of respect for Tony. I mean, obviously, he was a guy that is, as a pass catcher, as a basketball body that's out there doing that job, was as athletic and as accomplished in that part of the job as much as anyone out there. But why I think you can't say that is really it's applying a little different standard to tight ends than we do to every other position in the game. Imagine a defensive end that's a 15-sack-a-game guy, but it's an absolute liability. As a run blocker, as a run protector, a guy that can actually play the run. We don't do this in other positions. Let's say an offensive tackle that would be in the Hall of Fame, like a Walter Jones or somebody like that, they would say they're so incredibly proficient at pass blocking, but they're below average, they're mediocre or whatever at run blocking. I mean, we just don't do that. You have to be elite at all you do. But tight end's kind of this weird position where it's like, a tight end, even the best guys that have ever done it are in that 4-ish catches a game range.
Mm-hmm.
Poorest catches as amounts to less than 8% of your game snaps. So, I mean, it's cool. It's great. I mean, some guys were tremendous at that. But most of these pass-catching tight ends just weren't as good at the other part. And that's the glut of what they actually do professionally. So, and it's not to disregard Tony. Tony is actually – he's actually one of the more willing blockers. He does a really good job of putting his nose in there. He wasn't one of the guys – they would hide on the backside of formation, that wouldn't occasionally be at the point of attack. But Tony Gonzalez played alongside a guy named Jason Dunn. Jason Dunn was there for most of his career in Kansas City. Jason's 6'6", 280 pounds. He was the guy at the point of attack. He was the guy that was Grob, if it was Rob Gronkowski. They needed both of them because he couldn't do both of those jobs. And that's not a knock on him. That's just, sort of an example of how rare Rob is. Rob's both those guys in one. There is no other guy like that.
So what is the... what is the basis that people are using when they talk to you about why he should not be in the Hall of Fame? It just seems so easy. I mean, what is the evidence or the facts that they're throwing your way to try to justify that opinion?
You know, I don't think there are any the real weirdos would say he wouldn't be a Hall of Famer, but I think it's more that first ballot, non-first ballot thing, and that sort of gets back into the essence of whether or not he was actually the best ever at his spot. It would be an incredibly bizarre and perverse thing to think he wasn't in. I mean, people use the Terrell Davis example. I don't love that one. He played in 80-some games as a pro, roughly 130. You know, 131 games of his playoffs, 115 of regular season. So he's past that level. Tony Boselli, that level. Some guys that actually had some pretty seriously truncated careers. And in both those examples, those guys left the league not by their own volition. Rob's choosing. Rob can play a couple more years. He can accumulate some stats if that's what moves you. But he's choosing not to, and that's fine. I think he's more than made his case. So I think the people that would like to knock him sort of think of football as baseball, which it isn't. Mm-hmm. Whereas, everyone, you got to go to a bat however many times you do a year, and the best ever is the one that can accumulate and sort of hold that standard over time. And that's just not what football is. The best is the best. You know, you get past a 5 or 6 year mark, you've done it. And he held it through 9. So I really think it's a pretty basic, easy, straightforward argument with him.
How tough do you think? Because, I mean, when Willie McGinnis first came out and had that theory that Gronk could retire and then go back near the end of the season, I kind of laughed it off. And now that he's retired and you've got Drew Rosenhaus saying all this stuff, his agent, that he could be coming back, you kind of got to think, is this something that you believe he would want to do? And if so, how tough is that reacclimation back into the NFL, especially when you've got the injuries that he's been dealing with?
Well, I mean, all I'll say is he's authentic in the choice he's making today, but that's every player feels that way. I don't think anyone says, I'm going to retire today. I feel great about my decision. I love the place that I'm in. But I can also tell you where my head will be at 12 months from now. Nobody knows that. So I think this is, fortunately, the NFL is sort of a way where, they put you on reserve retired list. You can file some papers, but it's relatively easy to undo. You can feel certain about where you are today. But, that tight end position is going to be filled by one or two guys or whatever it is later in the season. November comes around and a bomb goes off in that position room and Bill calls and says, hey, want to do a 6-week run? I mean, I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility at all. I think the greater issue, though, here with Rob and why he would be a candidate for that kind of thing, other than just the nauseating idea of chasing that idea for 10 months until it happens, but is just that he's a workout nut. I mean, he's a guy who is, his father owns a series of gyms around the Buffalo area. This kid grew up working out. This isn't a guy that's going to sort of fall off the face of the earth and gain 30 pounds or whatever, or even lose 30 pounds. He's going to continue to lift and have a body that's kind of like that. Now, that's not playing football. I completely understand that. But remember also, even from our time with me and Dan Rochi doing the TV and then the radio for you guys, game calls over these years, watching these guys through training camp, Rob has basically been MIA from the offseason program as far as the hitting part and then the competitive mini camps for years. I mean, I can't remember the last time he played in the preseason game. So he's not a guy that, provided he's continuing to train and keep his body at that level, the door would always be open for him because I think he's a guy who can get himself up to speed. He's dealt with the injuries and the lack of sort of live work reps in summers and stuff like that for years. So if there was a guy that could pull it off, I think Rob would be that guy. And again, he's only 29 years old. So I thought his Instagram post was kind of funny and it was classic Rob, but I'm 3 months from 30. I'm like, yeah, congrats. I mean, he's a guy that literally, 33, his body's not going to be demonstrably different, especially without more game reps. I know that's crazy to put it out that far, but I mean, there are tight ends that have played much longer, obviously. So if he wanted to pick it up and do it, I would believe that he would be the one guy that could pull it off.
So I would tend to agree. Gronk, given his dominance for even a shorter shelf life than some of the other big names of the position, deserves to be considered the greatest of all time at that spot. I'm curious who you personally would have, number two on that spot, or who was number one before Gronk came along. Because if we're not humping numbers, right? Was it Gonzalez? Was it somebody else? If they're the number two guy and they had some holes in their game, then I just wonder how we kind of build that criteria. So who is the number two guy in your mind after Gronk?
To back up just a half a second, I've kind of been an advocate of this idea for years because that position is so difficult and the sort of two functions, run blocking and pass catching, are so wildly different. I mean, it's just two different skills. I've always thought that it would help people sort of understand that, especially because there's not a stat to go with it, if the tight end position actually had a run blocking and pass blocking guy in the Pro Bowl. I mean, it's two different jobs. I mean, it's the idea of like a pass catching back that they've moved towards now, as well as a guy that gets carries on the ground. I think if you did that, you'd have a decade or two decades here worth of guys who people were aware that, holy cow, he's the best blocker in the, you know, in the league at that position. All the players that go against them know that. All the coaching staffs around the league know that. But it's not something the fans going to pick up, and you wouldn't expect them to, because they're not watching that element of the game. So, and I think that's really been the issue over, at least since, you know, I was entered the league in 2000. I'm aware of the guys that were real beasts as far as blockers. One name that rings a bell is, you know, the people maybe remember a little bit from his Jets days is Kyle Brady. And Kyle was here for a year with the Patriots as well. But Kyle was essentially a third tackle out there. I mean, Kyle was 280 pounds long. I played against him as a Jet, but I think also as a Jaguar when I was down with the Jets. And he was the one guy where you felt overmatched physically. Like he would come off the ball. He was so long. He'd drive you out of the, you know, you'd drive you out of play. He'd extend his arms. Even with my punch, I couldn't even reach him half the time. And he was just dominant at that. Now, again, you're not going to get to go to a Pro Bowl doing that. But a guy like that, a guy like Algie Crumpler, a guy like Aaron Kenny, I mean, there's sort of this crew of people, or Jason Dunn that I mentioned earlier. Those are the really badass blockers. But nobody knows about those kind of guys. So the issue with the greats as far as the pass-catching accumulation, they weren't that kind of guy. So Tony's, I think, far and away the top receiving tight end there ever was. And Tony deserves respect. I think there are other guys that are on that list that were absolutely unwilling blockers. They were hitting on the backside of run plays. You know, they didn't want any part of the action. Tony wasn't that way. He was just an average blocker. He wasn't near the top of the league at that particular attribute. So I don't mean to knock him on that. It's just, you know, that's why the Gronkowski's conversation so interesting to me, because he was actually elite at everything that had to do with the job. And that's the issue here. There is no other human being like that that was top of really both functions.
All right. Finally, Matt Chatham, we are going to have on the show tomorrow Mr. Ted Johnson filling in, a ex-teammate of yours. Do you have anything we can throw in his face? Any good Ted Johnson stories or shenanigans from your time? Not to put you on the spot, but any memories of Ted Johnson when you guys were teammates?
I mean, the best TJ story, and you guys have probably already heard this many times, but is the Jamie Nails hit. I mean, we were out there on the field and
broke his helmet, Jamie, right? Nails,
yeah, the helmet. I mean, it's the most it's the craziest thing I've ever seen on a football field. Any YouTube clip that you can go mine from any place on the web. He literally knocked the guy's helmet off and cracked the face mask, and it's falling and laying there on the ground, and Jamie Nails is throwing it and swearing left and right, and we're all just looking at each other going, what the hell did we just see? Like, how hard does one have to hit another one to actually bend that piece of metal and knock it off his head? And it was always great for, you know, our pregame warm-up stuff when you're going against the other linebackers. And we had a pretty diverse group there with Willie, who's, you know, strong, long, you know, the absolute prototype body. But well, he wasn't big into banging a lot in pregame. You know, he had a little, he's going to use those reps in the game. Brewski was a lot that way too. You know, he's going to get a shot or two in, but it wasn't, you know, let's not waste them. Let's not waste bullets here in pregame. TJ was the guy that you didn't want to go across from him in pregame because he was going like 100 miles an hour. It's like, dude, we're trying to warm up. So, no, Ted brought it every day. I mean, he's got that got that thick forehead, so.
When he cracked that helmet, did he think his stuff didn't stink for a while? Did you guys have to kind of talk him down?
I think we were all just kind of shocked, quite frankly. You know, it's just like, what just happened? Like, is that real? You know, you're thinking like helmet defect or something. Like, no, that dude just like hit him so hard. Oh, a little cold out too, which may have aided it. But yeah, that's a pelt on the wall. That's something you keep up forever.
Oh, he's got that picture. He had it ready to show me in studio last time he was in here. And I, to be honest, that was wildly impressive. That was it kind of made me not ever want to piss him off, to be quite honest. Well, Matt, hey, thanks for coming on, man. You can follow Matt on Twitter as he completely stomps people who don't think that Rob Gronkowski should be a first ballot Hall of Famer, at Chatham58. Also, he writes for The Athletic. We appreciate you coming on again, man.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
All right, we'll see you, Matt. All right. No commercials. Actually, right now, just John Wallach's headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Gordon Hayward.
In the air and good. And that's what everybody here was waiting to see.
Plays here.
Brings to Hayward. Corner three is good.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
For the latest podcasts, the latest
sports news,
and for Toucher and Rich,
Toucher and Rich,
download the 98.5, the Sports Hub app now.
98.5. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Toucher and Rich are back on TV.
I really didn't know that.
Twitch.tv. Follow the Sports Hub. Watch and react with 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Wow. 98.5 Sports Hub. It's Toucher and Rich. Well, like, how old were you? Or did your parents ever have the talk with you?
Yes.
How old were you?
12, 11, something like that.
Do you, what grade is that? Is it like 7th, 6th grade, 7th grade?
Yeah,
I was thinking 42.
Kiss my ass.
It was 30 years ago when I was 42.
It was a long time ago. I don't know, 5th grade, something like that, 6th grade. Is that 11?
It's like 6th grade or
fifth,
so.
5th, 6th, something like
okay.
That.
Okay, how did it go?
It was fine. Most of the stuff they explained to me, I knew already. I mean,
I was a pro already.
Well, yeah, no, it had nothing to do with that. You just hear stuff, you know, in school and that kind of thing. I already knew most of it.
Was it a joint venture or was it just dad?
Just dad.
Okay. All right.
It was very awkward. My father was very awkward in delivering.
How about you?
I never got to talk. My dad gave me like a book. He's like, here you go. He's like, figure it out. And I was like, all right.
You're kidding.
So I'm being a million percent dead serious.
Your father threw you a book and said, I'll see you in a little bit.
He's like, if you got any questions, let me know. And I'm not going to ask any questions.
What was the book called?
I'm like, I have a lot of books. I don't recall. It was like it was legitimately like a cartoon book though. It's like, hey, here's
like how it's done in cartoon.
Yeah. I mean, really? I don't know if it was like how it's done, but it was kind of,
I've heard those exist,
yeah.
But I didn't think it really, I thought that was just something in store. I didn't know that was real.
No, yeah. My dad's like, here you go. You got any questions? And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to ask you anything.
Okay.
I'm like, I'm going to keep all my questions. I have many questions. I'm going to keep them all to myself.
And how old are you?
12, 13, something like that.
Okay. Because I've been talking to a friend. I have a friend of mine who has a third grader, and his wife wants him to give him the talk. And I'm like,
third grader.
Third grade?
What is that?
Oh.
What third is that? Grade is like eight.
Yeah.
He's like 8 years old. I'm like, dude. Stuff doesn't even work for a while. Like, why would you even, like, why do you need to be doing that at, like, eight? And all it did was just basically come to my own realization.
Girls still have cooties. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You don't need to have a talk with that kid.
So it just got me thinking about, like, I mean, I guess you're going to have to do it right around the corner, right?
Yep. My kids are 9. They're going to be 10 in July.
Have you decided your plan of attack?
Some would say you're a year late.
That's right. Because it's getting to the point where my
wife wants nothing to do with it. That's all on me.
All right. If you had a extremely awkward talk from your father or your mother, 617-779.
Just thinking back on that makes me cringe.
Yeah, because
my dad did not deliver it well.
Okay, so there is there's a guy I know who apparently this was. He's like 20, I think he's like 25, and he said that a while back, his dad came up to him and said, Mom tells me you've been looking at websites that you're not supposed to be looking at. And he goes, yes, Dad. And he goes, did you learn something from it? And he goes, what do you mean? He goes, did you understand what was happening? He goes, yeah. And he goes, all right, that's good. And that was and he was done, and he walked
like,
out of the room.
I'm going to show you how to delete your history real quick, all right? That's all you need to know.
So he's basically like, you're done. Now, I did know somebody growing up whose dad just showed him Porky's.
They
just watched Porky's together, and that's how he, quote-unquote, filled his requirement.
Hmm.
Like, he was just like, all right, we're going to learn about sex. And they just watched Porky's, which might be, like, the worst thing you could do.
Yeah.
But
here's what you do. You drill a peephole.
That's right. You essentially you assault somebody.
Yeah. That's what adults do, son.
Sure. And then you just, you know, you fill that hole. All right. Well, you know, with yourself. And then you scare away everybody who's in the shower.
Yep. That could lead to bad things, though.
Yep.
That could lead to real bad things if you do it often enough.
Think about, like, the worst way you could possibly introduce somebody. But then again, this was par for the course with this kid and his family. Because now it's coming up with me. Mine was, of course, awkward. It's always awkward. It never goes smoothly. But I went on the old camping trip, and it was just me and my father, and we were in the car, and it was more. I think the way he said it was like, "All right, Rich. Well, you know about sex, don't you?" And I went, "Yeah." And he goes, "You know how it's done, right?" And I said, "I think so." And he goes, "All right, cool." And then he went and talked to me about, like, all of these friends of his who, like, had promising lives and careers and had blown up by getting pregnant. It was, like, the most effective way you could have done it. Huh. It wasn't about the actual, like, you know, the actual technical part of it. It was more of, listen, don't get anyone pregnant when you are too early. It's you're gonna blow your life. And I thought that was fairly effective. I'm gonna butcher the entire thing. I know it. Yes.
I have someone has tweeted a copy of a book, and Jones, I want to make sure.
I have this.
Is that it? Is that the book?
We'll find out.
I don't mean I have the book. I mean, I have the tweet.
Did your parents completely blow it with you? Or did you blow it telling your kids about sex?
6-1-7, I got 2 years. I need the advice here.
779-0985, or more like what not to do. We'll take your calls right after John Wallach's headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.